All right. Well, let's go to Jeremiah 29, please. Jeremiah 29. And my theme this morning is, you are your city's hope for success. You think your success for your city lies in Maputo? Well, we thought it lay in Seychelles, didn't we? And maybe our success will happen on May the 8th next year. You are your city's secret to success. Jeremiah 29, verse 1. These are the words of the letter that Jeremiah the prophet sent from Jerusalem to the surviving elders of the exiles, and to the priests, the prophets, and all the people whom Nebuchadnezzar had taken into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. This was after King Jeconiah and the queen mother, the eunuchs, the officials of Judah and Jerusalem, the craftsmen, all the metal workers, had departed from Jerusalem. The letter was sent by the hand of Elasa, the son of Shaphan, and Gemariah, the son of Hilkiah, whom Zedekiah, king of Judah, had sent to Babylon, to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. It said, "Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all the exiles who I have sent into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon, build houses and live in them, plant gardens and eat their produce. Take wives, only one, man can't serve two masters. Take wives and have sons and daughters. Take wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage, that they may bear sons and daughters and multiply there. Do not decrease. But seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile and pray for the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare." Proverbs 11:10 says a similar thing. "When it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices. But when the wicked perish, there are shouts of gladness. By the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted. But by the mouth of the wicked, it is overthrown." And so the history is there in the first few verses. Israel has been beaten up by the Babylonians, and the Babylonians used to love to take the cream of the crop. Take the beaten nations, the vanquished nations, back to Babylon, and they would assimilate them into their culture. And so this exile is dragging on, and this prophetic word comes from Jeremiah, saying, "Don't listen to the false prophets. Don't listen to the prosperity gospel. It's not going to get better by leaving the pressure. I want to prove a point that it can be better in the middle of hell." In the middle of Babylon, I'm going to show you exactly what I want to do, and it's going to amaze you, because your prosperity is in your hands. Seek the welfare, seek the prosperity. In the Hebrew, that word there is shalom, which means nothing missing, nothing broken. You're to seek the peace, seek the prosperity, not just in the places, God give me a career, God help me manage Tana, but seek it for the place you live in. The King James says, "Seek the shalom." It means shalom in all its dimensions. It means growth in all of its dimensions: spiritual, physical, social, financial, and mental. But we have theologies in our history that actually over-dramatize the sense of rapture. God, let me out of here. Take me up. 26 years ago, when Jan fell pregnant with our first son, Jared, I went to my grandmother, who had grown up in the church, the wife of a pastor. All she'd known was the gospel. And we told her, and she said 26 years ago, "Oh, my boy, this is a terrible world to bring children to." There's some people who are so allergic to this world we live in. They can't wait for the rapture. Can't wait for, "God, get me out of here. I feel like when I go to the dentist. Lord, let me go. Beam me up, Scotty. It's time to go." And some of our theologies are overly developed in the sense of God taking us out. There are other Christians who perhaps won't go that far, but they'll remove themselves from society. Some will move themselves into a geographical location and will have this privatized religion with God, and to hell with, literally to hell with the rest of the environment. The peace that God wants is not just spiritual, it's practical. It's health. It's physical. I was telling the guys at our team, we have an apostolic team we work with here. I've been coming here for 15 years, and so I understand a little bit of the Malagasy scenario. And I told them, we cannot be satisfied with an environment that's so polluted. How can you say you're a Christian and be happy to live in this complete hellhole? Pick up the mess. Why? Well, because we're not just interested in heaven. We're interested in manifesting the grace of God on the earth, here where we are. Do I believe in the second coming? Yes. Do I believe in the rapture? Yes. All right, Pentecostals, relax. I speak in tongues. Put your maps away. Put your videos away. Left behind. No. No, while we're here, occupy, Jesus says. Let's do something. Let's give it a go. Let's make it different. Let's show that this gospel is not just some airy-fairy spiritual thing out there that's just about you and getting into heaven and avoiding hell. It's a growth in all of its dimensions. So, I know you're asking me, how do we seek the prosperity of the city? Couple of points. Number one, make a decision to feel an ownership of your place. We call that a theology of place. Our first 14 years of our ministry, we did it in the town I grew up in, Pietermaritzburg, near Durban, on the east coast of South Africa. We're now in Cape Town, the last 10 years. But when we were in Pietermaritzburg, we had this guy from another town, 1,000 kilometers north of us, called Rustenburg. Man, he was an irritating brother. Do you know that there are irritating brothers in the church? Yeah. That one you're thinking of, exactly. He was such an irritation. He would say, you know, in Rustenburg, we, and I wanted to lay hands on the brother, because there's provision for that in the Bible, lay hands on the brother, laying on our hands. And I thought, you know, I can't bear this. So I said to him, excuse me, do me a favor, go back to Rustenburg. What do you mean? I said, well, all you ever say is Rustenburg, this is Pietermaritzburg. The only similarity between us and where you come from is the Berg. Everything else is different. Now come now, be here. Are you here? So one of my sons was studying Mandarin in university and doing his political science degree. And they had a Chinese lecturer who came, and she was a new teacher. And you know what it's like when you get a new teacher? It's like blood in the water. It's like shark attack. When you get a new, nervous, inexperienced teacher. We used to love that when we were kids. We repented of that, but at the time it was great fun. And the guys were messing around, and she said to them in her Chinese English accent, be over here. You're hurting my heart. Be here. Don't be over there. What you're saying is, are you involved? Well, let me ask you, are you over here? Where are you? Are you in Basel? Are you in Stuttgart? Are you in Matsanga? Fishing, Gavin? Where are you, Gav? Are you here? Where are you? Are you in Murundava? Are you in Analavuri? Where are you? Are you in Arivumam? Where are you? If you're visiting, if you think that's strange, that's how they talk. The thing is, the shop's not over here. It's Ari over there. That's how they describe distance in Malagasy. Theology of place. No, we're here. So Acts 17 is the best example of that, verse 24. The God who made the world and everything in it, being the Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God in the hope that they might feel their way toward him and find them. You know, those of us who subscribe to charismatic theologies, we need a real baptism in the doctrinal sovereignty of grace, sovereignty of God. That God is sovereign. God is not scooting to the edge of his throne hoping that the charismatics prophesy the right prophecy, because then he can't move unless you prophesy. Now, I believe in prophecy, and you must prophesy. But he's not like nervous. You know, when you meet on a Sunday morning, oh, heaven, you know, takes a panada. They're all got a headache. They're all nervous. Like, oh, are they going to prophesy? We can't move unless they prophesy. No. You must prophesy. Sure. But God is sovereign. God will do it. This gospel will be preached to all nations, all ethnos, all ethnic groups, and then the end will come. So the question is not, will the end come? Will the gospel be preached? The question is, will you be part of God's end time army? Or will you just be an oxygen thief, a parasite, and a bloodsucker? Did I say that? Can't believe I said that. I'm shocking myself. Sovereign God. Any of you Presbyterian by background? I think God's more of a Presbyterian than a charismatic. You know that? Yeah, there you go. I see that hand. You put it down now. You're already saved if you're Presbyterian. You know, because God's sovereign. He's not going, what are these 47,000 Swiss families doing in math in Madagascar? What's this French couple lost in, supposed to be lost in France and love, the song goes. What are you doing lost in Tana? When did you leave Tomatov? No. God is a chess player. God is a strategist. God is, you know, God's more like an engineer than an artist. God's got a plan. He's got a blueprint. And he moves us like chess pieces on his board for his glory, for his purpose. Even as you're born at the right time to be the right contribution in your day. Verse 26 of that Acts passage, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place. We don't like that because we're too full of ourselves. We don't like it. No. I make my own choices. Really? I once preached a sermon. How free is your free will then? You know, many times we do things and we think that we did them. But we don't know that at the back of what we did, God is doing it. And even if we do things that are not technically necessarily in the perfect will of God, God will redeem everything. And you can begin something with a selfish motive, have a Damascus Road experience, and God can transform your being there without taking you back to where you came from. The exact places, says the NIV. Any Dutch people here? Vooraf bepaalde tye. Predetermined times and borders. And we don't like that because we're so furiously self-generated, masters of our own destiny. Invictus, the poem goes, I'm the master of my own destiny. No, you're not. You're only breathing because God gives you permission. You're a self-made man. No, you're not. Where do you think you got the ability to generate wealth? God gave it to you. People opened doors for you. Why did they open doors for you? Because God worked on their hearts. The best form of grace is to be born into the family you're born into. And if you're born into the family of a prostitute, of a one-legged woman in Calcutta, that's different to being born again into a family that loves God, that is educated, that has opportunities. Nothing that you have is of your own doing. It's all by grace. How arrogant we are. Jeremiah, build houses. Live in them, plant gardens, eat their produce, take wives and have sons and daughters. Take wives for your sons, next generation. And give your daughters in marriage. Have a kabari and have a hana, have a chat and then get them married. That they may bear sons, multiple generation here. That is happening. I can't wait. I told my son, hurry up, man. You've been married 8 months. What's wrong with you? We give you grandchildren. How hard is it? Multiply there. Do not decrease. You see, all of these metaphors, build houses, plant gardens, plant vineyards. All of these metaphors are metaphors of buy-in, aren't they? They're investment of heart, of soul, of future. And so when every 7 years, Madagascar decides to have a new president, as is the habit, what happens is they have a great growth, great progress. I've been coming since 1995. I've seen great progress. I'm irritated with the conditions of Madagascan politics. It irritates me. Because I've seen the progress. And then what happens? There's a coup d'etat. Then what happens? Foreign investment disappears. And then people suffer. I asked some pastors, how was the Tabba Tabba, how's the political Tabba Tabba affecting your church? And they said, no, it doesn't affect us, it's outside. I said, rubbish. The people have lost work. People are hungry. What do you mean it's not affecting you? If you're just in the corner going, bah, 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 speaking in tongues, that's fine. I guess that's fine. But we're not just about speaking in the corner, speaking in tongues in the corner. Buy-in. The foreign companies, the foreign investors, they take out their buy-in because of the ambiguity of the culture, because of the vulnerability of the investment. Jeremiah is saying, invest in Babylon. Invest in a turbulent place. And Babylon is the metaphor of everything evil. Everything. You couldn't get even further from the temple of Jerusalem than Babylon. Babylon's the extreme. But there, I want you to prosper. I want you to, but you can't prosper unless you really are present. Over here, are you here? Are you fully here? Or are you just passing through? This is not just for the Vaza expats that are here today, although I want you to hear this. Is this, are you only here as part of your missionary career, and then when something more lucrative happens, you're going? What if God wanted you to die here at 107? What? Yeah. What if you never went home for Christmas? I love the London Missionary Society. Some of those women, and I tell this to our ladies at home, especially the varsity, the single girls, they hate this story, and I love it because they hate it. I have issues, as you can see. And I said, history shows that there were missionary women in England who would, by the call of God, arrive at the Cook Islands or the Outer Hebrides or wherever, or Madagascar, and knock on the door of a single bachelor missionary and say, "Brother Thomas, greetings. I am Sister Mary Whitehead, and I've come in the will of God, under the instruction of God, by the call of God, to be your wife." Our girls hate that story. There's none of, what does he look like? Has he got a cute butt? Is he sensitive with a cute butt? He has to have both. Has he got any money? Is his teeth straight? You know, none of that. No, I'm here by the will of God to be your wife. That's quite scary, hey? All the single ladies here, listen to me. All the single ladies, I can see you're nervous. I told some of our guys and girls, they're so slow and so fussy. Don't you find that? They're fussy. I said, listen, next Saturday at 3 o'clock, wear something nice. Come. All of you, like Reverend Moon. Let's do a mass wedding. You, marry you. You. Love can come later. It's commitment. This is what's good for the church. I'm tired of you loose cannons running around, causing hassles. Are you just passing through? Are you just drifting through? This is the question we ask Christians all over the world. Build houses and live in them. Plant gardens and eat their produce. Dig in for the long run. See, building a house takes a time, doesn't it? Unless you, like as American programs, you can build a house in a week. They're all wooden. It's lovely. South Africa, man, oh man, they're all brick. Takes forever. I mean, I know Gavin built a school here in 2 days, but then that's Gavin / Chuck Norris. He's different. He's not like anybody else that I know. But it takes time. Planting gardens. It takes time to plant the garden. You've got to dig it. You've got to fertilize. You've got to put the seed in. You've got to wait. You can't go dig and see like a little kid does at nursery school, at preschool. It's the seed germinating and it kills the thing because you're so incurious. You know, the kids are like that. No, you've got to take time. You've got to be patient. Multi-generational producing of offspring takes time. You know, it's taken Jan and I 26 years of married life to kick out our children, kick them out. When your kids get to 18 and go to university, say Voluma. You can't have the guy there 36 and you still, you know, folding up his Star Wars pajamas, making him sandwiches to go off to work. No, kick him out. It's taken us 26 years to get our first kid married. Next one's getting married now in December. Hallelujah. And the last one is a girl, Sarah. She's 17, but she's not getting married till she's 37. I know it's a double standard, but she's my daughter, crying out loud. Takes a while. Takes time. Takes time to put your roots into the culture. Takes time to buy into the culture. I had a lady at the conference we did last week on Galatians crying in the coffee. She's through an interpreter, said to me, "I'm so sorry. You've come 53 times, which is how many times I've been to Madagascar, and we don't see any progress." Well, I wanted to commit suicide with a blunt knife right there. She said, "I'm so sorry, the Malagasy." I said, no, they have. It takes time. This instant Christianity that comes from the West, it's not real. Two steps to abundant life, five steps to your victory, your best wife by Friday. What, go on? Your best wife by Friday. At least till Monday it's going to take you a little effort. Your best husband by Thursday. I mean, where do we get these stupid things from? One lady wrote a book, 101 Ways to Simplify Your Life. She did, in the bookstore. My son took a photograph of it. 101 Ways, Christian bookstore. 101 Ways to Simplify Your Life. She just complicated by 100 ways. Takes time. Takes time. All right? Buy-in. Theology of place. It's our first point. But you must make a decision. No, we're here. No, we're here. We're not spiritual drifters in the name of taking the nations. No, we're here. God's called us here. And local church, you see, in many places, local church is completely disrespected by the local church. I'm only here until I get a job at Matsanga. I'm only here until I finish my university. I'm going back to Murindava. Yeah, maybe you should go back, but maybe we should stay. Put down some roots. Roots are not swear words. Secondly, don't use your city for your own advantage. Jeremiah 29:7, advance the interests of your city, says in the Afrikaans Bible. Advance, I like that. And be active about improving your city. It says, but seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you. Put something back. Do you know, we have 600 families every month moving down from the rest of South Africa to where we live in Cape Town. I don't blame them. It's beautiful. Vineyards, and I've got all the French listening now. Lovely wine. Probably not as nice as yours, but we can have an arm wrestle and see. Beautiful mountains and seas, and it's a stunning place. Well governed. It's not falling apart. Infrastructure's good. There's 600 people. And you know, we can get excited about, people are coming, more people to get saved. Yeah, there's more people to work out of them, this little self-interest worm that's in their heart. I'm glad they're coming. In the 1990s, we were involved with a church that planted a church in London from Durban, and they took 40, mostly young people with them to London, started this church. It's a good church, still exists today, doing well. And I went to preach here, and I said, this was in the early 90s, in the bad old days, before the new democracy, and I said, it must be very hard to lead you. It must be very hard to build anything with you here in London, because I want to suggest that many of you are here for selfish reasons. Many of you are here because you're embarrassed by the idea of black government. Meaningful pause. Some of you are here because you're running away from your mother. Having met your mother, I understand it. Some of you are here to serve the Almighty's pound, so you can go back at that stage 17-1 and buy a nice house in South Africa. You had to use the city. Christians are like that. Use churches, use ministries, use moments. How much are we giving to our city? See, I can just sit here and complain about Tana, the traffic, the policemen, or we can actually say, what can we do about this? And one of the things we spoke about yesterday, ladies, was the greatest challenge to men is not pornography. It's the thing behind pornography is the spirit of passivity. Passivity is a cancer that's destroying the ranks of our men. Passivity in our city, where it's somebody else's problem. Somebody wrote a book once that was called Pretoria. That's the seat of our government. Pretoria will provide, and other myths, other illusions. Someone else will do it. Someone else will reach the lost. Someone else will fix the sewers. Someone else will fix the roads. Someone else will do something about this. I'm just here to moan and complain. It takes no special gift to point out the defect. I had a pastor friend once who said to me, you know, Pete, I'm just like this. I see the hole in the donut. For me, the glass is always half empty. I said to him, you know, bud, that's a sin from which you can escape if you repent. This idea that, I'm just, that's how I am. I'm pessimistic. I'm cautious. No. The gospel wants to break into us and cause us to be so excited about our life and where we live that the influence is felt. I have a lovely story. Those of you visiting, this man of France, who looks like Chuck Norris on a good day. Gavin Jordan and Rhoda came here 15 years ago, and planted this church, Tana City Church, at Kim Na Leeds, and built this wonderful school and done amazing things. Amazing impact through this family. You know the best story I've got from him? One of the best stories. In fact, I've told Gavin, when I meet new people and Gavin and I are sitting with them, I say, Gav, number 47. He's got to tell that story. He rolls his eyes and tells the story. I love his stories. He's fascinating. It's better than television. Cheaper. No license either to pay. Go talk to him. One of my best stories is that the lady who works for them said that they had a kabari, or they had a meeting with a Foktani, and that guy said, why can't you be like that Vaza pastor who's tarred the road in front of his house? It's a brilliant story. Why should I tar the road? I pay my taxes. No, we should tar the road because it'll be an opportunity to give God glory. No one likes a parasite. Proverbs 30:15 says, the leech has two daughters. Give, they cry. I have a friend, an acquaintance, he's in the ministry, old guy, Pastor Jonathan Leach in Durban. And that was his favorite verse. The leech has two daughters. Give, they cry. A way of life that's just about receiving, just about leeching, just about passively receiving. That reminds me of a sewer, doesn't it? Accepting everything, the Dead Sea, giving nothing of life back, always receiving, is contrary to the cross of Christ. The cross of Christ is the ultimate symbol. This God, 9 words that changed the world. For God so loved the world that He gave. How blasphemous is it? So you don't use the Lord's name in vain. And when movies come on using the Lord's word in their dialogue, you turn it off. Well, wonderful, brilliant. But when we don't reflect God, I think we blaspheme. God gave, we should give. God invested, we should give. God gave His best, His Son, we should give our best. The Old Testament, they weren't allowed to bring a sheep that was blemished or blind or lame. They had to bring a perfect lamb as a picture of Jesus Christ, the perfect Lamb of God, who would one day be sacrificed for the sins of the world. The standards are higher in the New Covenant. Higher. They gave 10% under the law. We give more. If you commit adultery, the law will deal with you. But Jesus said, but now I say, if you think lustfully in your mind, it's the same. It's always greater in the covenant, the new covenant under the grace of God. We should give more. Pouring our lives out. This is the way the cross reminds us of Jesus who gave Himself. The early church was famous for their outlandish extravagance. They gave. Everyone gave. No one was without. Everyone was blessed. Proverbs 11:25 says, whoever brings blessing will be enriched. The one who waters will himself be watered. What a wonderful kickback. When you give, you receive. One guy he complained to me one day. He said, why don't you visit me? Because somewhere in his mind, he realized, Pastor, point number 5,232,000, visit the sheep. So I said, no, I'd be violating the law of the universe. He said, what? What law of the universe? I said, the law of the universe. He said, what? I said, reaping and sowing. I said, visit me, then I'll sow you a visit. You'll reap a visit if you visit me. Yeah? There are guys who want to reap without sowing. Guys want to benefit without contributing. And there are some in any given church who benefit year after year after year from the collective energy, from the spiritual protection. I don't want to overplay that because Jesus is all you need. I know. From the nurture, the children benefit, from the ministry, from the community, the preached word. And they never add a thing except hassles. When I see those people, I think, you know, the gospel hasn't really broken through. Of course, there's no one like that here. Third one is how do we invest? How do we become the greatest hope for our city's success? Well, thirdly, is also a heavy one, is repent of committing the habitual sin of low expectation for your city and groveling in disempowering pessimism. Big words, but you can get the tape. The habitual sin of low expectation. I met a guy, John Dawson. He and his mother have been Joy Dawson, powerful through YWAM. What? If you can get anything they've written, it's worth getting. I remember him writing that he had responded to an altar call given by a famous YWAM evangelist for repentance. And he came up and he realized that he wasn't repenting because he was sleeping with his neighbor's wife or he'd stolen money from YWAM or whatever. He realized what he was repenting for was that he was committing the habitual sin of low expectation for Los Angeles. He didn't think God could do anything good in Los Angeles. And what he'd done, he'd taken the power of God and he'd made it subservient. He'd pushed it under his negative expectation. And he saw that was sin. I thought, what an amazing perception. See, negativity is a human gift. No, I knew that would happen. Yeah, I knew that would happen. You know, May 6th, forget it. They're not going to have a new government. No, no, no. We're going to be talking about this again. You know, anyone can do that. There's no real intelligence to do that because you've actually looked at the details, Seychelles, Maputo. You know, you've seen all the failed talks, so you're very intelligent. You're just projecting that and you're expecting that. It's easy to do that. But it takes faith. It takes energy to say, no, 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 no. No, I'm believing for something different. Not a mindless believing. Like the, you know, in the 80s, the kind of the faith message was, you know, your leg is blown off, but it's not really blown off. Just believe it. You know, you're not really sick. You know, you're dying, but you're not dying. You know, you're the head and not the tail. You're the statue, not the pigeon. Sometimes I feel like the statue. So you pay your taxes. So Gav, you know, why do you tar your road? I've paid my taxes. Surely that's enough. Yeah, okay, good. What else can you do? What else can you do? Because this is the gospel of Bebe Cuckoo, as they say in Malagasy, the more and more. He's the God of more. Let's represent him well. What else can we do? How else can we improve it? In Africa, of which we are a part here, we suffer from Africa pessimism. It's a unique malady. Africans are completely pessimistic about themselves. And you know, Africa has one unique thing, shocking leadership. And there are certain fires of hell that are reserved for ungodly, manipulative, self-promoting leaders. But you know what? Africa is full of magnificent people. Do you know that Africa is full of incredible minerals? And do you know that 7 out of the currently fastest growing 10 economies in the world are what? African. Just got to just keep the Chinese under control. Over here, now go over there. How's that? Pessimism is the praise language of the devil. One guy said to me, can I talk to you? I said, yeah. I said, I've got so many problems with your church. I said, no, wait, let me go first. Can I give my list first? What is that? Pessimism can become a habit, and it becomes the praise language of the devil. 4, how do we become our city's greatest hope for success? Number 4, well, we work hard for the glory of God. Yes. It's not just a Swiss characteristic or a German characteristic. I think we do learn things. Protestant work ethic. Some nations are lazy because that's all they do. But working hard is not a Western idea or a whatever your tribe is idea. Working hard is a God idea. Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work heartily for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord. So behind your dalla-dalla boss who drives you mad, just look behind them. Just say, excuse me, ma'am, could you just move to the left? Oh, good. She goes, what are you looking at? I'm looking at Jesus. What do you mean? No, he's my real boss. What? Don't try that at home. Don't try that at work. But if you can understand, I'm doing this for Jesus. I'm doing this for his delight. I want him delight. I want him to say to the Father, look, that potential we put into Harry, that potential, that same Harry we spoke about all week, that potential we put into Margaret, that potential we put into whatever your name is, look, it's beginning to blossom. Look. All of heaven goes, ah. It's in the Bible somewhere. But work hard to the glory of God. See, the work is our worship. And we've got a guy called Plato, a Greek philosopher, to blame for dividing life into sacred and secular. So everything that was of thought and ideas was spiritual. It's up here. It's the spiritual realm. And everything over here, which is the body, and food, and sex, and work, and life, and material things, it's all secular. Sacred and secular. And that's how we live our lives. We'll leave today, some of us, and our behavior tomorrow will look nothing like today, because today we got dressed up, we came to church, we participated in some sacred activities, and tomorrow we go into the world, and we'll just be secular. No. All of life is sacred. Your work is an opportunity to worship God. As John Piper says, can you drink a glass of orange juice to the glory of God? You can. When we were small, young, like these little blighters on the front row, my dad was doing wallpapering in our house. You know wallpaper, hanging wallpaper? It's the most demonic thing. Wallpaper has a life of its own. Wallpaper is not cooperative. And so he, you know, he's perfectionist, my dad, an accountant. You know, it's all exact. And we once had to fold some letters for him. He had a whole lot of things to mail out for the school organization he was leading. And we didn't, the corners didn't meet. He's like a Swiss guy. Huh? The corners didn't meet. So we had to redo them. So one day he says, okay, my boys, my twin brother and I, he said, we were young. He said, okay, finish this last section. Oh, gosh. Moan, whinge. That's what you do when you're 13. Oh, no. Because your brains haven't clicked in yet. So you're just a whinger. Oh, no. So we did it. And you know there were bubbles. If you don't do wallpaper properly, you get bubbles coming out of the wallpaper. We might as well have just sworn at our mother. So my father came home and he said, boys, there are bubbles there. And then we said the wrong thing. Do you know sometimes when you guys say the wrong thing, you think, why am I saying this? How can I be so dumb and still breathe? You know those moments? Happens a lot, huh? And we said to him, Dad, no one will see it. That's where the piano goes. I can still feel the implications. And I'm 50. Can you believe it? 40 years ago. God will see it. And do you know that that's been a thing in my life? God will see it. Not God will see it. No, that's not the tone, but it's God will see it. Do it for God. Get the bubbles out for God's sake. Not because my father's an anal retentive perfectionist. I don't know what that means in Malagasy, but it's not a happy thing, whatever it is. Can you drink the orange juice to the glory of God? Can we clean the toilet to the glory of God? Can we clean our road to the glory of God? Those of you, can you just take that little stretch in front of your house that Gavin did and just tar that? Can you do it? Ah, full of bear. No, your mind is small. Can you do that? It's very biblical. You want a Bible verse? Nehemiah. They all built the wall in front of their house. This bloke with his daughters, I love that. Four daughters. Imagine, laying bricks. Come on. Not little, you know, Afrikaans should say, fenster poppies. Little flowers sitting in the window. They're little soft, you know, no, woman of courage and muscle. Russian, you know, strong woman. Laying. And then there were the perfume guys who didn't want to do it. No, the perfume guys did it. They were the officials. They didn't want to do it. The officials of Tekoa, they didn't want to do it. You know, take care of your place. Clean your place. Clean your gutter in front of your place. Fill the holes in front of your house. We do that, and all those who are Christians completely transform our environment. Can you add up your column of figures at ShopRite to the glory of God? Can you do your projections to the glory of God? Can you tighten that helicopter engine to the glory of God? Well, if you don't, it won't be for the glory of God. So, all work is noble. Not ungodly work. Not, you know what I mean? Godly work is godly work. If you do it for Jesus, obviously if it's moral work. Number five, how do we become our answer to our city? Is work to get your skills to the highest possible level as an act of worship. Most of our guys in South Africa, they want to improve their skills. Why? They want more vula. Want a bigger house. When my boy was, I think, Evan's age, he was young. My father, who's loved Jesus all his life and is a good man, and he's been successful. He said to Jared, you must do your homework. Because you want to get a good baccalaureate, what do you call it here? Matriculation. So you can go to a good university. So you can get a good degree. So you can get a good job. So you can get a good salary. So you can get a big house. I stopped him. Stopping my dad, he takes courage. He's a big guy. So I said, sorry, Dad. Sorry. I said, Jared, that's not a good enough goal for us, okay? And he looked at me. He looked at my dad. He looked at me. And my dad's like, thinks I've gone dala-dala. I said, no, we want more than that, boy. We want more than that. Because if that's all it's about, is to get a big house, you're an idiot. I didn't say it like that, but I meant it. No. So the guys who are improving their career so they can get more money and get promotion. In many churches, maybe this is not a problem in Madagascar, but the pastor is the last one to know that people are leaving. The furniture truck. You see the furniture truck past as you drive past. Oh, I wonder where they're going. So they're going to Johannesburg. Why? More money. More money. Is that all you're going for? Work to improve your skills. And by skills, I mean your professional skills. I mean your personal skills. I mean your relational skills. It's not to the glory of God if you're all tired in yourself and you can't speak to anybody. How will they hear unless someone is sent? How will that one sent say anything unless they speak and overcome their personalities? Some of us need to get a new personality. Some of us need to find boldness. We're lazy. We can't string two words together. We're all built in ourselves. No, you need to change that. Why? For the glory of God, as an act of worship. Don't bring blemished sacrifices. Imagine this. If our work is worship, then surely we want to do the very best we can with all of our ability. When that revelation breaks through, that alone will send your career through the roof. I told the men a story yesterday and I saw some of the guys shaking their heads in unbelief. Could not believe I would say that. They don't know me. But you know some people in the church that think that pastors must just sprinkle holy water on whatever they want. My dog is sick. Can you just pray for it? I want to do this. Can you just pray for it? There's one guy sent me SMSs, texts. He's got franchises in a certain business and he's now selling them. So every day, please pray. I've got to put him in. Please pray. And I've got to phone him back. And how did the meeting go? And, fine. Please pray. And I pray and I pray and I pray. All I'm doing is praying for this guy's business. And then he sends me a text. Success. Sold 13 million rands worth of franchise. I said, good. When's the tithe coming? The text goes quiet. Oops. Okay. Sorry, I didn't understand it. I thought you were in business for the sake of the kingdom. What am I thinking? I didn't realize you're in business just for yourself. How could I think that you'd do it for Jesus? So, we have this prayer line, and I said, my brother, what can I pray for you? He says, I want you to pray that I get promoted. I said, I can't do that. He said, what do you mean? He said, no, I don't have faith. He said, what do you mean, I don't have faith? I said, I don't think you're very promotable. I said, what? Because he also knows, 0.5732.7Z says, whatever people ask you to pray for, pray for. I put my tithe in. Now, come on, pray. So I said, no. He said, what do you mean? I said, no, of all our people, I think you are possibly the most unpromotable person. He said, why? I said, well, you're always late. Not a Swiss bone in his body. You're always late. Always late. You live around the fringes of church life. Your wife looks like she's been pulled through a bush backwards. She's not well wifed. You haven't wifed her very well. She's supposed to glow. She's supposed to be at the top of her career and her game, and she should be living in the full thrust of the gifts God's given her. She looks terrible. You've added nothing to her. Your children. Well, don't get me started. Your children are climbing the curtains and you think it's sweet and we want to lay hands on them. The guy's like, have a nice day. How can I pray for you? That sounds harsh to you? Good. Because I think we're messing around. And so when we go to appoint elders and deacons and home group leaders, somebody said we should go to the Muslim bosses or go to the unsaved bosses and say to the bosses, hello, sir, I'm going to appoint employee number 47 and he's going to be an elder. And now I know you don't understand this, but this is what an elder must do and this is how they should behave and these are the qualities I need to fulfill this job called elder. What do you think? Do you think I should appoint them? Very good question. They'll say, no, I know nothing about your religion, I know nothing about your God, but based on this criteria, you'd be crazy to employ them. To appoint them as an elder or deacon. Anyway, it doesn't get any better. Maybe two more points will be happier, but it's really depressing right now, isn't it? Number six is position yourself through diligence and holiness so that God can position you for influence. Position yourself. So this guy who was wanting to be promoted without paying a price of diligence and commitment and leading his family and loving his family, that guy needed to learn that it wasn't a case of just saying, oh, God, bless me. It's a case of bringing your life under the fountain of God, that God can bless. Give God something to bless. Gather the firewood of contribution, of diligence, of care, of interest, of investment of yourself, so that His fire can fall on it. There are a lot of us people saying, oh God, let your fire fall. God, do something great. Little formulae. I've done A, now you must do B. I got the prophetic word, so you must deliver. No. Position yourself in the culture. And the message of Daniel and Joseph is that you do not need a Christian city with a Christian boss and a Christian president. The funny thing is, both your presidents, current and former, both quote the Bible. Both say they pray. I don't understand that. Christians are supposed to thrive in the middle of Babylon. And when we are faithful, God can promote us. And so suddenly this revelation breaks through in us. And so employee of the month, it's a Christian again. Employee of the month, it's a Christian again. It's another Christian. The best agent in your department is a Christian. The department that gets the budgets, hits the budgets, and hits the targets quicker, Christian. The place where there's least relational difficulty, it's because they've got Christians in that place. The most creative ideas, the new products, the new markets, the new ideas, new inventions, Christians, Christians, Christians. Incredible. The best students in our school. The captains of our hockey team and our tennis team and the chess team and the debating team and the drama team and the best pianist in the school is a Christian. Why? Because we've got unfair access to God and we're doing it for worship and the glory of God is on it. And then lastly, is flavor your community. Salt, you know the story. Let's be salt. It's preservative, healing. Let's be light. Produces guidance and comfort and strength and warmth. How do we do that? Or the holy marriage. How's your marriage doing as a lighthouse? Is your marriage just safe sex? What is it? Are you just getting vari from her and sex from her and he's just giving you kids? What is this? Is your marriage a place of worship and a place of excitement and the presence of God all over it? Do people look at your marriage and say, I want that. What about your singleness? So singleness is not a curse. Singleness is a gift. In fact, you can get a lot more done and get more money to do it. No, singleness, you're holy in a holy way possessing your singleness. And you're raising optimistic, compelling children, happy children. And you're modeling generosity. And you're tarring your road when you didn't have to tar the road. And those who work for you love you. Those who work for you will die for you. They're not even Christians because they know that you love them and you treat them with respect and honor and dignity. And you're improving their world and their light, their life. And you're being healing balm and ointment for people's souls. Your business adds value. Not some junk that you import from a country that chucks junk all over the world and you just import it because it's cheap and you get a quick return and a quick... And you make a big profit. You know, a big profit is not really biblical. In the 1700s, a man was kicked out of a New England church because he had violated the agreement to charge nothing more than 1% profit. He charged 5% profit. They kicked him out of the church. They treated him like an adulterer. 1700s, 1800s, whenever they were there up in New England, Puritans. We think, oh, I made a massive profit. I ripped off whatever. Made 12,000% profit. That's not God honoring. All of our work, all of our strategy, infected with this desire to glorify God. When it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices. When the wicked perish, there are shouts of gladness. By the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted. Tim Keller, who leads a church in New York, says, serve your city rather than resemble it. Or remove yourself from it. Serve those who need help and love and bring God's justice to bear on a broken world. What would happen if today You, instead of driving past, you stopped your car and you gave the gendarme a cup of coffee. I don't know, try it. Bring God's justice to bear on a broken world. Create and cultivate culture. And hold out Christ as the ultimate satisfaction of people's spiritual search. He says there are five possible attitudes towards your city. One is you assimilate the city. You become like the city. You give in to the city. You look like Sodom and Gomorrah. No difference. Two, you can reflect the city only by having a Sundays only theology. So there's not much difference. The divorce percentages in the church are the same as out because you're just reflecting. You're not any different. Or you could be despising the city. It's an evil to be avoided. So we'll build a little community up on the hill and we'll make pottery and do calligraphy and whatever. Take our kids out of this terrible world. Or, four, you could ignore the city. You know, I'm passing through. Beam me up, Scotty. The rapture's about now. I'm disengaged. Or, he says, you could love the city by being actively involved and modeling another way. Could God help us to wake up tomorrow morning with a different view of our city? Could we stop complaining? Could we stop being passive if we are? I mean, maybe some of you, this doesn't apply to you at all. Whatever you're doing, and it's in line with what I'm saying, do it some more. Get others to do it with you. Encourage people. Because when the city prospers, you prosper. And this gospel needs to get practical. It can't all be pie in the sky when you die and some thoughts and ideas up there. That's practical. Theology is practical. The book of Romans is a practical pastoral handbook written to people learning how to live free from sin and alive to Christ. I recommend to you Jeremiah 29. Build houses. Plant vineyards. Plant gardens. Take wives. Have children. Dig into the community and change it for the glory of God. Amen.